Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, the stock market. It goes up, it goes down. It's a bull, it's a bear. Does anybody really understand how it works? Tonight's guest does. Guy Adami is an internationally known trader, professional investor, and one of the original Fast Money Five on CNBC's Fast Money. Let's take stock of the stock market and separate the bull market from the bullshit. Plus, verbal charades. Two words, two syllables. Sounds like hit show. I'm Adam Felber, the man who tries to keep this show's conversational ticker aiming for the portfolio of topical blue chips. And now, please welcome the woman who short sells coherency every time, Paula Poundstone.
To tonight's house band, a returning champion on guitar and harmonica, Ben Castle. Ben is also the co-host of the comedy podcast Totally Rad. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Thanks, Ben.
Ben Castle, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, Adam.
Wait,
hold on.
There's some god awful crinkling happening. Who's crinkling? Bonnie.
I'm not crinkling.
Okay.
Does it sound like I am?
Somebody was.
I switched ears. Hold on.
It did sound like you were crinkling.
I wasn't crinkling. Is that better?
Okay.
No, nothing's happening
Captain
now.
Crinkle.
Now we're good.
I have a feeling she doesn't even know when she's crinkling anymore.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah. Adam, I noticed something. Okay, we've talked about the kind of toilet paper that I use before because it's bamboo, and I asked the environmentalist that time about the claims of environmental, superiority over one brand of toilet paper or the other. But
on the
packaging of my toilet paper, I just noticed yesterday, the last time I bought a brand called New Trees, that's N-O-O Trees, toilet paper, and it says this on the outside. It says 100% virgin Ecolux. And then it has a copyright symbol over the words Virgin Ecolux. So they're not even worried about being measured for environmental you know, sustainability one way or the other. They've simply invented their own language. So I was thinking that we might start to promote Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone by saying that Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is guaranteed 100% made with Hilary Autonomonomy.
Hilary Autonomonomy?
Yeah. I mean, who's to say that it isn't?
Hilary Autonomonomy. No, I'm on board for that,
Paula. I don't think I said it right. Hilary Autonomonomy. There it is.
Oh, Hilary Autonomonomy.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
It's definitely made with 100% of that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I did yesterday? I know you want to know.
I do want to know.
And it was a hot day out yesterday, but it didn't matter to me. I was out there. I dug a hole in my front yard. Dug a big hole. Just
Why?
Kept digging.
Yeah. Why'd you dig a hole?
Because my vacuum cleaner broke down.
Those two facts don't seem to go together in any possible way.
Well, I was going to bury the vacuum cleaner. And then, that's what I've done in the past. But I decided that maybe I could...
Wait, bury still it?
Yeah. I love my vacuum cleaner. It's a Dyson. I call it Mr. Dyson. Vacuuming is very important to me because I have a lot of cats. And there's just something so satisfying about vacuuming, you know, when it goes well. So I dug a hole, and then at the last minute, I decided not to bury it. I thought, you know what? Maybe I can still work with it. The ball won't roll. You know, the Dyson prides itself on the big ball.
Right. Now, let me ask you something, Paula. Have you considered getting it fixed?
I can't afford a thing like that.
Whose paper was that?
Okay, that was me.
Can I ask you a question, Bonnie? Why are you doing that?
No, I'm making a note that we should get Mr. Dyson, if he's not alive, somebody from Dyson to come on and be a guest.
Well, that's a great idea, but you know,
well,
Bonnie...
Well, are you making that note on parchment?
Yeah,
no,
how do you manage...
A piece of paper. Let's just... Let Paula continue. I'll explain when it's my turn.
That was a particularly noisy. There used to be, years ago, there was a character on television named Bozo the Clown. And Bozo was a locally done television show. So the Chicago Bozo looked similar, but was not actually the same person as the Boston Bozo or the New York Bozo. They were done by local stations. And one of the things Bozo would do is it was a kids show, and it had a live audience of kids. And he'd call a kid up from the audience, and he would write the kid's name on a big easel with a big newsprint paper. And he would write the kid's name, and then he would draw a picture from the kid's name. It was really very clever. And when he tore it off, he did like a big flourish of his gloved Bozo hand, and it made a sound really quieter than the paper that you just tore off. How is that possible?
And on that note, let's go around the horn. Let's go to Tony Anita Hall in Studio City. How are you, Tony?
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm doing great. Okay, I you know what? I've started watching Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy movies.
Oh,
that's
fun.
Terrific.
Yeah. So
what have you seen
so
far?
Desk Set.
That's a good one.
Adam's Rib.
Oh,
and I
that's
love
a
Desk
good
Set.
One.
Adam's Rib, and then I'm halfway through Woman of the Year.
Oh, that's great.
That's a really
Did
good
you
one.
See their Did you see Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy in Deliverance?
I don't think that's them, Paula.
Yeah, they did an earlier version.
Sir, I suggest that you squeal like a pig.
Yeah, it was... No,
Do
she
me
wasn't
the favor,
the,
sir, of squealing like a pig.
No, she wasn't the assailant. She wouldn't be. But it was good... It was exciting. You know, gave me a backache from stress the way the remake of Deliverance with Burt Reynolds did. Boy, I'll tell you what, that Katharine Hepburn can use a bow and arrow. She is, well, she was.
Yeah, she's quite an archer.
And I understand she did a lot of the Whitewater stuff on her own, didn't even have a stunt woman.
On her version of Deliverance with Spencer Tracy.
Yeah, yeah. She was really, really, really good. Did you see, Tony, did you see Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy in Halloween 2?
What are we doing, Paula?
Scared me.
I missed that on the list.
Oh, yeah. It scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Jason, I'm your sister. I demand that you stop this. It would be Michael. Michael, I'm your sister. I demand that you stop this.
Yeah, he's a babysitter, like a teenage babysitter, and she, you know, shows up at the door. Whew. Oh my God, it's scary. And there's a scene in the closet where she fends him off. No, he fends her off. It's very, very scary. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are some great movies.
Did you see did you see Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy in 11 Angry Men and a Woman?
That's a good one.
Yeah, very, very good. You know, yeah. And it had a surprising twist to it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So you have
did
that
you
to look
see
forward
Katharine
to.
Hepburn and Spencer Tracy in Last Tango in Paris?
Oh, boy, can she tango.
Yeah, she could. That feels wonderful. Please do that again.
She shouted at him. Yeah.
You know, listeners coming into this show might have thought that the superior Katharine Hepburn impression was done by Paula and not me.
No, not true at all. That was all yours.
There
we go. My God. Tony, is Willy Wonka on the list? Is Willy Wonka on the list? Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy and Willy Wonka. It's one of the best versions.
Right, because it's Spencer Tracy in a little cap as Charlie and Katharine Hepburn as Willy Wonka.
It was one of my favorite films I've ever seen. I love the Katharine Hepburn Spencer Tracy version of Willy Wonka.
Oh, look, everybody. It's our favorite hand puppet, Mrs. Culpepper. We haven't seen you in a while, Mrs. Culpepper. How are you?
Sunrise. Dip it in some dew. Oh, the captain and I used to love to. We'd say, let's watch a film together tonight. And I would say to him, and I knew what his answer was going to be, but I would say to him, what would you like to watch? And he would say, Willy Wonka. And I'd put on the Gene Wilder one. He'd go, no, not that one. The Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, Willy Wonka, and
there's nothing like watching her welcoming them. I totally understand, Mrs. Culpepper. Come with me, and you'll be in a land of pure imagination. Yeah. Mrs. Culpepper, what are you and the captain watching now during the COVID lockdown?
Well, we don't watch films at this time, Adam. Together, we don't watch films together.
Oh, you don't? Why? Are you more TV people or are you listening to a lot of music, I suppose?
No, it's not a matter of the source of the entertainment. That is not the problem.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, if you're not getting along, you're not getting along. I'm sorry to hear that, Mrs. Culpepper.
No, it's not that, Adam. The captain has passed.
What?
That's true.
Don't tell me the coronavirus claimed yet another victim. I mean, I know he was quite elderly, but
it was not the coronavirus. It was tyrotoxism, in fact, which is the poisoning by cheese or other dairy product.
Certainly, everybody knows that. Well, I'm very sorry to hear it, and once again, I seem to have brought up a painful memory that I probably should have recalled from an earlier episode.
It was exactly right. It was a painful, painful memory. I'll call now that it was the good of the God, Adam, before you ask another question.
Well, it's good to have you back, Mrs. Culpepper, that's for sure.
Lovely to be here.
Captain Crinkle Bonnie Burns, welcome to our program. What have you been up to besides making extraneous sounds?
Well, I want to explain the extraneous sounds. So my daughter got me these notebooks because I had papers all over my desk. And so the idea, which I agree with, is you make all your notes in the notebook. But I pulled that piece of paper out to make sure I'd see it. The Tyson vacuum cleaner.
You know, the whole notebook.
No, but that had to be in a special place so no, that I wouldn't forget. No, and I could bring it up with Tony.
No, but the notebook, as opposed to loose paper system, is rather destroyed when you tear the papers out of the notebook.
No, I know, but there's so many things to do. It gets so that there's so many pages written on in the notebook. To give a page special attention, I have to pull it out, and then that's like...
You've made your notebook. Your notebook is osseous.
OSHA?
Osseous.
OSHA?
It's an adjective that means serving no practical purpose, producing no useful result, futile.
I guess that was a vocabulary word.
It was a vocabulary word. It was osseous.
Oh, okay. Well, no, because what I end up doing is either folding the paper in half lengthwise so that I know it looks different, or I'll put it in the notebook, but I push it up to the top, like in the back, so it gets special attention.
You know what we should do? Captain what? Crinkle should have her own line of office supplies.
Yes. Captain Crinkle's extra loud office supplies.
Yes, exactly. Just shit that makes noise. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Like a pen that when you touch the ballpoint of the pen to the page, it goes, ah!
Right. Right. And your stapler goes, aruga!
You know, that just reminds me, I still have not been able to figure out how to get that Butterfinger ringtone on my cell phone.
Oh, my God. Apropos of nothing, Bonnie Burns opens up a wound on this show that I thought was long closed, which is that
Bonnie, it's so pathetic.
Bonnie spent the better part of a year trying to get Paula's Butterfinger rap single on iTunes.
Not my Butterfinger.
And that whole saga can be heard. I think it takes up episodes 60 through 63 of our show or something.
It wasn't the better part of
Bonnie
his year.
She's trying to explain how all that happened.
Yeah, no.
So, Bonnie, you can't get the ringtone that you relentlessly marketed on our show on your own iPhone.
No, I was like putting the different tones on my phone, and I thought, you know, this is so pathetic. I'd really like to have Paula's ringtone on my phone. It'd be great that that's what went off when it rings. And I cannot figure out how to download this. And for a while, I was having a hard time figuring out how to upload it.
Yeah. Well, for our listeners who have used phones before, it is available to you. I know we have at least several listeners who's bought it.
Yeah, maybe. Bonnie, are you trying to put it on your landline? That could be part of the problem.
Oh, wow.
I don't know the difference between download and upload. I don't know. To me, that's like being in New York when a cab says, are you going downtown or uptown? And I'm like, well, I just want to go to this address. Could I just get in the car and you drive me?
Wow. Both of those have very good explanations. Well, downloading and uploading is the difference between receiving and giving. That download is something you receive, and an upload is something you give.
Huh. I wouldn't have thought of that.
No, that seems complicated to me.
But that's exactly what it is. It's not complicated.
Bonnie, I don't know. It's not my place to plug this, but Bonnie is now offering a tech webinar on Wednesday afternoons. And I know I have learned so much from it.
I offered a completely lucid explanation as to the difference between uploading and downloading. You send an upload, you receive a download.
No, you said something about giving.
Sending, like, giving, yes.
Yeah, send, okay, whatever.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So
hey, Paula,
Adam,
save
so
us.
Adam,
do you have a word? Yes.
So, Adam, at your house, do you say, what do you hope Santa... What do you hope Santa uploads to you this year? Is that giving? Is uploading giving or
which was giving? Upload sending, sending, giving,
oh,
sending.
Like, what do you hope
if I
Santa
upload a file, I'm giving
to
it to the web.
Year.
I'm sending it to the web. I'm I sending see. It away from me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope to download a pony this year.
Paula, please tell me you have a word.
I do have a word. Adam, I have a word.
All right.
Upload.
It isn't.
No.
God damn it.
No, Adam, it's not. My word is impunity. It's a noun that means freedom from punishment or from the harmful results of an action. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Trump lies with impunity. Now, the truth is, I've heard this word many times, but I wasn't quite sure what it meant. In fact, I maybe even did know what it meant at one time, but I forgot. So I don't want to lose it again. And therefore, I am putting this word into my vocabulary song.
Great.
Wait a minute. I have to get my Glock. And NRA people, don't get all excited. I mean Glockenspiel. There we go.
In your hands, a Glockenspiel can be just as lethal as a Glock.
Not true. This week's word is impunity. It's a noun that means freedom from punishment or from the harmful results of an action. He fell off the roof and didn't end up in traction. Last week's word was phlegmatic. It's an adjective that means unemotional and calm. Oh, look, I just drove a nail through my palm. The week before that, we had quotidian. It's an adjective that means happening every day, daily, or ordinary, like a Mainer eating a blueberry. Going back before that, we had gaucherie. It's a noun that means awkward or unsophisticated ways. I haven't used a napkin in days. And not long ago, we had disputatious. It's an adjective that means fond of or causing heated arguments. Fuck you, I don't want your 2 cents. Let's never forget Gallimafree. Oh, excuse me. Let's never forget Gallimafree, which I pronounced wrong until nobody, James Hyder, corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge,
who's
hodgepodge.
Podge.
Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do. Oh, fuck. That's how the greats do it when they make a mistake. When they're playing a song concert, they make a mistake, they admit it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Woo!
I remember seeing Yo-Yo Ma once, and in the middle of a concerto, he just said, "Oh fuck, wait."
Yeah.
Let me do that again.
Beverly Sills, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that one performance by Peter Paul and Mary of Puff the Magic Dragon. And they said, Puff the Magic Dragon, fuck. And then Dragon, just willing to admit their mistakes right along the way. I like that.
Yeah.
Woo.
It's comforting.
Oh my gosh, I'm sweating. I am dripping.
Yeah, with sweat from your musical exertions?
Yeah, yeah. I got blisters on my fingers.
Well, Paula, you are playing the living hell out of that thing. I mean, it's an amazing Glock work. I'm happy to be part of this vocabulary song.
I keep getting invitations from, you know, symposiums and the like in Europe for the, you know, various Glockenspiel appearances. But because of the travel ban from Europe on Americans, I haven't been able to go over. And boy, it's just breaking the hearts of Glockenspielists all over the world.
Well, it's a pity. I mean, I'm sure that you've got a lot. I mean, at some point, you might even consider getting a Glockenspiel that has more than 8 notes.
That's ridiculous. You know what? You know what I always say?
A lot of them do, you know.
If you can't get it done in 8 notes, then you're not. You can't do it. So that's what I say. That's a 8 notes is plenty.
If you can get it done in 8 notes, you're almost certainly white.
No, you know, Adam, this is not a race thing.
I was referring to you know, all the blue notes, the accidentals that you don't really get to play that much on an 8-note scale.
Oh, I knew that. I'll tell you something. My Glockenspiel is a downtown Glockenspiel. I don't know if you know the difference between a downtown Glockenspiel and an uptown Glockenspiel, but mine is a downtown Glockenspiel.
I just get in the cab and say, can't I just tell you what song I want to hear?
Yeah, I just have never understood the uptown downtown thing in the cabs. Well, you don't do that in Los Angeles. You get in the cab, you tell them where you want to go.
Well, New York has all these avenues that are one way. So when a cabbie picks you up on 8th Avenue, they want to know if you want to go uptown or downtown, because if you want to go in the other direction, that's kind of a pain in the ass for them to turn around, because they have to go, you know, to a different avenue.
You know what? Cry me a river.
You asked.
Oh, my God. Oh, you drive a cab and you have to go to a different avenue? Oh boy, that's gonna be a problem, huh? Yeah. So there's people who just drive in one direction all day. That's
no,
ridiculous.
They turn around. I mean, they do turn around. They just want to know where you're headed.
No, the cab driver says I'm headed west today. If you're not going west, don't get in.
They often have places to be too. If their dispatcher, you know, their cab has to go downtown at the end, they need to know that.
No, they don't.
All right, then they ask you for no reason other than to mess with you.
Yeah, no, they just go, I'm going west, so, you know, if you go to Kansas, great. Otherwise, don't even get in. And then they just head out, just one direction. That's it. You just go in that direction. You know, it's not a fucking plane, it's a car. You just turn it around. Oh, I can't turn. Was you got one of those wheels that don't turn, Mr. New York cab driver? Yeah.
No, it is a pain in the ass if you're not going the right direction.
That is ridiculous.
Thank you, Tony Anita Hall.
You're welcome.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
You asked, and I gave you a very reasonable explanation. You're like, well, no, that's not it.
No, and apparently that's part of what slowed down the mail. They got this guy that Trump has running the post office, the postmaster general, was a cab driver in New York. And so they'll only take your mail in one direction. So, like, for example, with vote by mail, you know, if you live east of where the votes get collected, then they just aren't going to get there.
I got to tell you, in terms of getting there, this entire segment has become a Kafkaesque maze for me that I'm hoping to find my way out of it. And I think I have. Coming up, Bernard Baruch said the main purpose of the stock market is to make fools of as many men as possible. Our guest will try to save you from that fate. That's coming up when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
On this day in unremarkable history, Johannes Brahms said, I fell asleep 3 times while writing it.
Thank you, house band Ben Castle, and we're back. Paula, what do you know about the stock market?
You know, I have watched the PBS NewsHour almost every night for 30 or so years. And at the end of the news summary every night, they always talk about the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones Industrial. I have never, in the course of these 30-something years, known what it meant.
Really?
And now that I don't have any money, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't have any money either, I've taken an interest in the subject of investments. I think it's kind of the same as when Monopoly became popular during the Depression. Like, it's just fun to imagine buying and selling. But I don't know anything about it at all.
Well, we have somebody here who can guide you about the stock market. And it's me! No, it's not.
Oh,
I'm an idiot.
No.
Guy Adami is one of the original Fast Money 5 on CNBC's Fast Money and chief market strategist and director of advisor advocacy for Private Advisor Group, my old job. He is an independent trader, a champion for independent financial advice, and a veteran financial services leader. Please welcome to our show, Guy Adami.
What is going on?
Yeah.
Hey, Guy.
Phelps. Guy. P-squared. Wait a second. Before we start, I want to hear about the guy that fell asleep riding something 3 times. I mean, that's fascinating stuff. Paul.
No, he fell asleep writing it.
Oh, writing.
Johannes Brahms.
Writing with a W.
I fell asleep 3 times while writing it.
Uh-huh. Sorry about that. My mind. Yeah. I apologize. Sorry.
That's all right. It happens all the time. It's because you were dozing off. Let me begin with something very basic, Guy.
Go ahead.
What's a stock?
What is a stock? That's a great question, Paula Poundstone. I might start calling you P squared here. A stock means if you buy a share of Apple, for example, that means you're an owner of the company. You have partial ownership of the company. So a stock owner is an ownership in the company that you bought. So Apple, General Electric, Boeing, Netflix. So if you were sitting around watching Netflix and you say to yourself, gee whiz, it seems like everybody's doing that. Maybe I should invest in this company. You can become an owner of the company by purchasing one share of the stock. And that also entitles you to go to the annual shareholders meeting, which are tons of fun. So that is, in a nutshell, what a stock is. Ownership of a company.
Is it limited edition?
Limited edition, like an Eagles record?
I think she's asking if there's a finite number of stocks.
No, that's a great question. So in terms of stocks, I think right now in the United States, there are 4,000 actively traded stocks, either on the Dow Jones or the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, which I'm certain we'll talk about. Then you factor in all those penny stocks. They're probably close to 15,000 or so listed stocks that Phelps and Paula Poundstone can trade somewhat actively. Let's put it that way.
What's a penny stock?
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. Stocks that trade in pennies or nickels and dimes. Typically, we call those lottery tickets in the business. And in our show, we try to avoid talking about them because just the mere utterance of a name of a penny stock can make the stock go higher or lower, and we try to avoid that at all costs. in our show at CNBC, we try to avoid talking about stocks with a market capitalization, in other words, a worth of less than $500 million. The thought being there, those stocks will not move as much if we mention their name. So that's sort of the guidelines, the parameters that we follow.
Interesting.
Guy, so what is the NASDAQ? What's that?
So the NASDAQ's an exchange. So it's another interesting question. So the NASDAQ is an actual exchange in the middle of Times Square. It's on the corner of 43rd and Broadway. Very large building, circular. You've probably gone by it 1,000 times. And on that exchange is listed basically the companies that you know are the NASDAQ 100 that people talk about. For example, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, companies that you all know and love. Those are listed on the NASDAQ. So
Starburns.
NASDAQ, Starbucks. Those are the companies.
No, Starburns.
I don't think Starburns is on the NASDAQ, Paula.
Starburns? Is that a friend of
that's
yours?
That's our network.
Is that somebody
it's our
from
audio
Alabama?
Network.
What's that?
It's our audio network that we're on. It's a podcasting network.
The Starburns Network, listed on the NASDAQ.
It is.
Lipstick Nancy Guy, which is the name of my company, and I sell these Poundstone pussy pillows that are of catnip.
Excuse me?
That's on the NASDAQ.
Uh-huh.
It's a cat toy.
Uh-huh. Okay, but again...
Yeah, we're on the NASDAQ, Guy.
You know what, Guy? Paula does bring up something kind of interesting that I would guess that might be interesting for you to explain to her, which is the difference between Lipstick Nancy and I presume Starburns Audio are privately held companies and thus can't be on an exchange, right?
Right. They have made the decision to be a private company. For example, and I'm not looking to get into the politics of this, but basically the largest privately held company in the United States, by and large, is Koch Industries, headquartered out of Wichita, Kansas. Cargill is another company that you might have heard of, also basically in the Midwest. Those are two private companies that have not gone public, and there are a number of reasons why they decided to stay private. So your company might be thinking about going public at a certain point, but maybe they want to get critical mass before they do it.
Or any mass.
Or any mass. So any mass, en masse, go to mass.
So by private, do you mean that there is no stock?
There's no publicly traded stock. So they may have shareholders within the company, but it's not publicly traded. In other words, Paul Poundstone or Phelps can't go out there and call his or her broker up and say, hey, buy me 5 shares of that lipstick. What was that called? Nancy?
Yeah.
Lipstick
Nancy. That's not happening. We could come up with a great symbol for it if we decided to go public, like Lip Nan or something. I don't know. You guys, I'm sure, have thought it through.
Yeah. Everything made by Lipstick Nancy, by the way, Guy, is made with 100% Hilariata nominee.
Of course it is. I would expect nothing less.
Go back to what an exchange is. We're going really basic here.
Okay, so do you ever see them? I know the answer to this. This is what they call a rhetorical question. I love the fact that there's an H in rhetorical. But did you remember the movie Trading Places? Of course you both do.
With Eddie Murphy.
I don't remember it very well, okay.
Oh, Paula, please. I mean, we're about the same age. You remember the movie. At the end of the movie, they're trading Florida concentrated orange juice. Remember that whole thing?
I don't remember that.
Yelling and screaming. Phelps, help me out here.
Wait a minute.
At the end of the movie, there's people yelling and screaming, and they're at the floor of a stock exchange, I believe.
They are on the floor of the New York Mercantile Exchange, and that is people buying and selling securities. The Dow Jones traded on the New York Stock Exchange are men and women buying and selling securities. So that's what an exchange is. It's a place where people come together to buy and sell securities, stocks, bonds, commodities, those types of things.
Now, Trading Places, are you talking about the Katharine Hepburn, Spencer
Catherine
Tracy?
Hepburn was in that movie, Spencer Tracy, along with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. That's right.
Oh, my gosh. They were so great.
Tony, it's tremendous.
So much to look forward to. Okay, so the NASDAQ is a specific place where people are trading?
That is correct. This NASDAQ, located in Midtown Manhattan, the New York Stock Exchange, on Lower Manhattan on the corner of Broad and Wall Street. Broad Street.
That's Lower Manhattan.
Lower Manhattan.
What about, is that uptown or downtown?
Well, come on, Paul. You just answered your own question. I mean, come on.
Lower, Paula.
Lower be downtown?
Lower would be downtown. It's about as far downtown as you could possibly get without falling into a body of water, yes.
But it's a circular building, guy. So why does it matter? Why can't the cab driver just drive around the building and come the other way if they need to?
Again, asking me questions that I just don't have the answer. I mean, it's one of those things that mankind has been sort of wrestling with for all eternity.
All right, so where is the Tao then? What is the Tao and where is it?
What is the Tao? The Tao
great
is
question.
That's a great question. So it's an indice of 30 companies. Don't ask me to name all 30, but today, for example, the S&P 500, which are 500 companies, closed at an all-time high. Think about that for a second, Paula and Phelps. Think about this country, where we are, what we're in the midst of. And during this entire thing, on today, 103 days after the market cratered in March, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, as well as the NASDAQ, effectively are all trading at record highs. It's a staggering thought. So the chasm, and that's another word with an H in it that probably is unnecessary, between the real economy and the stock market continues to widen and has never been wider, in my opinion.
And that's an important thing, because especially because we have a president who seems to not believe this, but the stock market is not the economy, right?
Not at all. The president, I think, knows exactly what's going on, but he understands that if he continues to point out the fact that the stock market is making all-time highs, to a large portion of this country, they'll equate that with or conflate it with the real economy. And they'll say to themselves, right, gee whiz, look at what's going on here in the United States. And listen, I mean, it's working for him. When he started his administration, he said the stock market is going to be a report card for how well we're doing, and the stock markets are at all-time highs. And that's just, I'm not saying it should be, shouldn't be, I'm just stating facts.
Right.
So we'll see what's going to happen in November, but that's a huge portion, a huge part of his platform.
But doesn't that suggest that the rich people are not affected by the economy the way the rest of us are?
You know the answer to that. That's 100% true. I mean, in this environment, the rich are getting richer. And, you know, you say to yourself, well, give me an example. Well, look at what's happened to the stock in Amazon. Look what's happened to Facebook. Look what's happened to Apple. Look at the large owners of those stocks. So the wealthiest people, their wealth is growing exponentially while most people are hurting. I mean, at the peak of this downturn, there were 40 million fellow Americans unemployed. I don't know what that number is now. It's not 40 million, but we're talking about somewhere between 10 and 15 million. So for a lot of people, things have never been worse. Yet on the other end of the spectrum, things have never been better. So, you know, you continue to have this have and have nots, and that's problematic. And that's only, in my opinion, going to get worse.
Yeah. So what's a bond, guy?
So if a company wants to raise money and they don't want to issue stock for whatever reason, they can basically go out and have people lend them money. So they'll issue bonds, and Phelps can say, you know what, I want to buy those Apple 30-year bonds. They're yielding whatever they yield. And you get paid basically a coupon every month, every 6 months, every year. So you lend them money and they pay you back interest. Now, the riskier the company.
What's the yield? What does that mean?
Well, I was just, see that, look at you. I was just going to go down there. So the yield is basically the percentage that they're paying you to borrow money from you. In other words, Paul is lending Apple money. They're going to pay you a yield. Now, the riskier the company, if you think about this intuitively, the higher the yield, right? The more risk, the higher interest rate they have to pay you. And then you go back into the 80s. And there was something that was created called junk bonds. So you can think about that intuitively. And the name junk bonds suggest very risky, yet you're getting paid a very high rate of interest. So that's how bonds work. Depending on how risky the company, the higher the risk, the higher the yield, typically.
So why did Michael Milken start out as some sort of a hero for his work with junk bonds, and then it all fell apart?
Yes, I don't know if you've ever met Michael Milken, and I'm saying this in all sincerity. So Michael Milken, back in the 80s, so think about this for a second. In the 1980s, Michael Milken himself was making $500 million a year. Think about that. So what happened was, you know, without getting into the, you know, the nitty-gritty of what he did, he became bigger than the actual industry. And if you recall, then a prosecutor or DA named Rudy Giuliani, they spent more money investigating Drexel Burnham than they spent on all previous investigations combined. And what happened was, you know, in this country, you're allowed to be successful to a point, and then I think you get too big, and then you get a crosshair on your back. And I think that's what happened with Michael Milken. And
it's certainly what's happened with me.
No question about it. I mean, there's a, you know, P squared crosshairs. I mean, it's all over. if you do the hashtag, you see it on Twitter. It trends every day.
Everybody's on it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what happened with that? So when you say that he was worth more than the industry, I'm not sure what you mean about that.
I think he just got, he became the industry. In other words, instead of the industry being the thing on top, he became bigger than the actual industry. When you said Wall Street back then, immediately you thought of Michael Milken. And I think for a lot of people that was problematic. I mean, I'm not suggesting that he was bigger in terms of net worth in the industry. What I'm saying is, he became the face of the industry and thus had to be brought down. In my opinion, listen, I'm sure there were some illegalities going on, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but my point is he got too big, and they came after him, and they put him away for a while. But, you know, if you think about what he's done in his second life, he's given a tremendous amount of money to charities.
True enough. He's done
some pretty magnanimous things. So very interesting individual, Michael Milken.
All right, so he made his money in junk bonds. Did he ever mess around with mutual funds, whatever that is?
So mutual funds basically are pooled accounts. So Paula Poundstone has a few $100,000 sitting around. She's like, you know what? I'm going to put it into a mutual fund. And then Phelps says, you know what? I got a few bucks as well. And they put it into the same mutual fund. There are all kinds of mutual funds. I think right now globally, I think they're $55 trillion or something in mutual funds. Wow. I think Great Britain is the largest country in terms of assets under management and mutual funds. But they're pooled accounts, and they should be managed by a professional. And you know, that's sort of your Wikipedia definition. Not that interesting, that's what they are.
When you say managed, what do you mean? Is it someone with a name tag telling them what aisle? What do you mean by managed?
Well, people that are actually buying and selling securities, stocks, bonds, whatever's in the mutual fund that they think obviously is going to appreciate in value. So managed in so much as somebody's watching it actively. Does that make
sense? They're doing the investing for us.
They're doing your home. Paul, remember when you were in high school?
Yes.
And you sat next to that cute guy and you asked him to do his your homework for him or her. You know what I'm talking about? That's what they're doing. Your homework for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I never would have asked anyone to do my homework. Know. I was too proud. I just plain didn't do it.
We should take the show public.
I'm thinking about it. Hey,
along with Lipstick Nancy, you take this public, forget about it. You'll be the next Jeff Bezos.
That's right.
Oh, man. I like that idea. Except for I think I would pay my employees. Nah. All right. I have a question for you. This managing, this watching what different companies are doing, right? And then, so you're talking about being able to go buy or sell, right at the critical moment, right? Well, what about, and I didn't read Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys, but I heard him interviewed. And isn't that like a computerized way of doing that is going to outstrip anybody?
It's interesting. So you're talking about the difference between, human beings by definition are emotional creatures. And when you bring emotion into markets, typically bad things happen. As computers and artificial intelligence, computer learning has come in, they obviously don't trade with emotion. And there are a lot of people that think in the years to come, people are going to no longer do this, and it's all going to be algorithms and computer learning generated models. And maybe that's what's going to happen. There are people, though, throughout history that are very good at picking stocks, at picking sectors, and looking at the macro environment saying, you know what, given what's transpiring right now, I think this is going to happen over the next 6 months, and those things play out. So a lot of people have made careers out of making one or two really good calls. But to your point, what you're getting at is there's somebody in the business, and your listeners can Google this name, Peter Lynch. And Peter Lynch would say, buy what you know. For example, you go to Chipotle Mexican Grill and the place is packed, and you say, gee whiz, look at this. And then you look up and say, this is a publicly traded company. I can buy shares in this company. And you understand it because you've been there and you see how many people are there. That's buying what you know, as opposed to going to an Abercrombie and Fitch, for example, and they have the 60% off labels all over the place and nobody's there. And you say to yourself, gee whiz, it doesn't look like they're doing too well. I'm not going to buy their stock. So a lot of it can be done just being a human being and paying attention to your surroundings.
Under the current situation that we're in, if you go to Chipotle and it's packed, and then you go to the Abercrombie and Fitch and it's empty.
Excuse me? I missed that last one.
And you go to the Abercrombie and Fitch, but it's empty.
Right.
Then the soft porn posters at Abercrombie and Fitch, then you wouldn't want to buy Chipotle because all their customers are going to be dead soon because they're packed into a restaurant. And you shouldn't be packed into a restaurant
right now.
So you're
getting in the weeds. You're getting in the weeds now, Paul. I mean, you
understand
my point.
Because I'm bringing in reality.
I mean, you're really dragging this down into the depths of misery. You understand what I'm saying.
Yes, in non-COVID
times. But if you want to get all like, you know, Nietzsche or Jean-Paul Sartre and, you know, get existential, you're right. Exactly. Spot on.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Nietzsche had his joyful moments, not so much Sartre.
But guy, oh, I went to a party with Nietzsche once. The guy was,
honestly. Riot.
No, he like lampshade on the head. Always, you know, every time I turn around, he had a bunch of people around him. And he was saying, you know, two guys walk into a bar. Oh, my God. Nietzsche was, you know that expression, knee slapping Nietzsche? That's
sure,
where that
yeah,
comes from.
You know, Arthur William Feather said, one of the funny things about the stock market is that every time one person buys, another sells, and both think they are astute. Stay tuned to find out who is really astute in the stock market. The cat of the week is Gus from Cleveland, Ohio.
Listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
McCavity! I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back with investor Guy Adami. Boy, this is eye-opening.
Guy. Hey, Guy.
Hey,
Now, I invested in, I guess, a mutual fund, I guess.
Sure you did.
I invested $50. When should I get out? It was just a few days ago, by the way.
You did?
Yeah, I did. And I've been feeling rich ever since.
All right,
I'm like Mr. Clampett.
So you ready for this? I want you and Phelps to write this down. If you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. So to answer your question, you bought something. So you have to have a plan. So you have to say to yourself, okay, Paula, if this goes to $75, I don't care what's happening in the world. I'm selling it. If it goes to $45, in other words, if I'm losing money, I don't care why it's happening, I'm getting out of it. So you have to have a plan in place. I can't tell you what those numbers are. They're specific to the individual, but you have to have a plan in place before you do anything. And my sense is, given the question you just asked me, you don't have any plan, girl. Yeah, I just said that. I know you don't.
I'll be honest. It was totally emotional.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, it doesn't mean it's wrong, but you have to have a plan in place as to when to get out, whether you're right or you're wrong. You can't just leave it to chance. So But don't let the stock, you have to trade the stock. Don't let the stock trade you. You want to write that down as well, by the way.
Here's my plan. So I sift litter boxes. I have 6 litter boxes and I sift them 4 or 5 times a day. So I have this callus on my hand from sifting, and sometimes it hurts and other times it doesn't. What if I got out when my callus hurt and stayed in when it didn't? Would that be a good plan?
I think there's a salve for that, Paula. I don't know.
You know what I love about what you just said?
Is salve, that you, it has an L in it.
Yes, that you used the L in salve.
He's been leaving out those silent H's left and right all day.
That's because they're silent, but salve.
Isn't that a great word, salve?
It is a great word, yeah.
Thank you.
You almost lubricate with the L as you say it. Now, when they're on the floor, what are the people wearing, the jackets?
I love that. They're things called specialists. And specialists specialize in a handful of stocks. And then there are other people that are the brokers and the traders from the different brokerage houses. And their jackets, which are typically very colorful in nature, designate who they work for. Like, they are effectively the uniforms of traders. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what are they doing? What it looks like is just noise. It looks like, you know, they're just yelling. Who is recording? What is the purpose of their yelling? Why are they yelling?
So it's interesting. As I mentioned earlier, the movie Trading Places, what you saw at the end of that movie, and I encourage your listeners and viewers to go to Blockbuster this weekend and rent Trading Places and go to the end of the movie, and you'll see.
Jamie Lee Curtis is great in that too, isn't she?
Oh, Jamie Lee Curtis is great in everything, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, are you still investing in Blockbuster, by the way? Because, Guy, I have a tip for you.
Let me hear it. What's the problem?
Well,
nothing.
Yeah, I bet you still hold stocks in Forever 21 as well.
Love Forever 21.
All right, wait, but I've taken you off your course here. So we're talking about why they're shouting and what they're shouting on the stock exchange floor.
Right. It seems in this day and age, it seems so antiquated and Neanderthal that men and women are yelling at each other to buy and sell different things. And there's probably a truth to that, but I will tell you, having worked down there, it's actually more efficient than you can ever imagine. It works. The open outcry system works. Now, as computers have become more mainstream, obviously, if you went to the New York Stock Exchange 15 years ago, there were 15 times the amount of people that are there now, and machines are taking over. And another 10 years, you know, they're going to probably be a handful of people doing that. And that open outcry method of people yelling back and forth is going to go the way of the dodo bird, which is unfortunate, because I do think it was a fascinating and interesting and by the way, a system that worked.
But what were they doing?
The machines can make these trades so fast.
That's the thing. So when was the last time you put, well, I mean, I want your listeners to think about this. When was the last time you placed an order to buy 10 shares of General Electric as fast as you can? It's not about speed, right? So the fact that speed somehow came into the equation, to me, really took a lot away from the markets that we knew for decades. But, and you know, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but, you know, technology is great. It's not always, though, necessary.
So what are they doing, though? They're telling, so whose orders are they following?
So that's fair. So the people on the exchange, where are they getting their orders from? Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, they're taking instructions from the traders at the brokerage houses on Wall Street. So a telephone order comes in, buy 1,000 shares of, what's that, Lipstick Pig or Lip Pan or whatever, Lip Nan?
Lipstick Nancy.
Lipstick Nancy.
Right. Lipstick Nancy. And so he walks into the ring. He looks for somebody that might be selling Lipstick Nancy, and they execute a trade together. So that's what they're doing a lot of times. And if you think about it, this happens, or it used to happen, thousands of times a day in hundreds of different names of stocks. And the sound down there, to your point, how do you hear what's going on? I'll tell you something. Again, having worked there, my first few days on the commodities exchange, I couldn't hear anything. It was just white noise. And you get to a point where you could actually start to hear individual conversations. That's how in tune you get. So it just takes time. And it's really interesting. So And to this day, there was a Tom Cruise movie. I want to say it was one of the Mission Impossible movies when he's sitting in a side room and he's reading the lips of his then fiance and their girlfriends, I think. And my point of saying that is, you know, I've gotten to the point where I can hear conversations in other rooms, yet have a conversation with Phelps and Paula Poundstone at the same time. And the discipline of working down there.
I think what you were citing, though, was Tom Cruise's actual life when he was keeping those creepy tabs on Katie Holmes.
Again, no. I know. Listen, I happen to know that Tom Cruise is a big listener of this podcast, and you don't want to lose him. So you may want to apologize now.
I'm sorry, Tom.
Tom Cruise, if you would like to come on outside the actor's studio, we're available for you. All right. So how would, say somebody was selling shares in Lipnan on the floor.
Why would they want to do that, though, if you think about it? Why would anybody want to sell those shares?
Yeah, you buy Lipnan. You hold on to those for your grandchildren.
Absolutely.
So how would they know who would buy them?
Are they vendors?
Do they go, Lipnan, get your Lipnan?
Can I tell you something? Actually, yes. They'll walk into the crowd, and that's what we call it, the crowd, and say, you know, Lipnan, who's selling Lipnan? And some guy on the other side, I got 50 Lipnan at $4.80, and this guy says, I'll pay you $4.65 for 50 Lipnan, and they come to some arrangement at some price, and that's a bid for the buyer and offer for the seller.
It's so old school. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they just have a handshake.
Sure they do.
And they bought into iGuzzy.
Well, you know something? It's interesting. And let me tell you something, Paul. So it's interesting you say that, and I just want to talk about this for a second. You say, well, under those set of rules, it sounds like at the end of the day, somebody could say to the other person, I never bought those shares from you if the market went against them. And you're right. That could happen. But it's self-policing, and it'll happen one time. And the next day when this gentleman or lady comes in and tries to buy or sell something, the rest of the crowd will shun them. So you'll get away with it once, but that's it.
I love that.
So that's why, getting back to my earlier point, it's efficient.
Yeah. But let's step outside the stock exchange now.
Let's do that.
Wait a minute. When you say stock exchange, in Manchester, Massachusetts, where the family that I used to live with lived, there is a store.
Was that the Sanders family?
No, it was the Masieros. There was a store. What do you call it? A general store? A consignment store.
Sure.
Called the Stock Exchange. It's still there. And I've never been inside that store, but I think when you go in there, people yell, cashmere sweater, cashmere sweater.
Well, I'm glad we took that detour. But stepping outside the stock exchange.
That was Paula took me to Vermont. I'm back here.
Oh, believe me, I know.
It was Manchester, Massachusetts.
But the reason I want to step outside the stock market is because people are loving trading on their phones and stuff now through apps and whatnot. It almost seems to me as though that there's been sort of a gamification of the stock market in the way a lot of things have been gamified. You want to talk about whether that's a good idea, why it might not be a good idea, and what's going on with...
Well, I happen to think you're spot on. I mean, so think about what's... Obviously, we all know where we are right now, but think about along the myriad of things we've been missing. One of the major things that this country has been missing are professional sports, not just for the entertainment value, but for the fact that there are a lot of people in this country that like to gamble on professional sports. That's just fact. Well, if you think about it, for the last few months, they've had nothing to gamble on. So where have they gone? Well, if you're familiar with Dave Portnoy, the Barstool Sports guy, you know, he's made a point of talking about the stock market. And I think for a lot of people, trading stocks has become the outlet for betting on games that they haven't been able to do. And I think to your point about gamification, I think that's exactly what's going on. You pick up your phone, you can buy and sell things. There are no commissions anymore. Everybody's going to this no commission strategy. So,
well, then how are they making money? How is the app making money?
Well, I mean, they're making money because when the assets under management gain interest and they get paid certain, we call them sort of, they get paid nano pennies on how many shares they trade on exchanges. So a lot of times they have agreements with exchanges that they get paid. So they're making their money, trust me. So they used to make more on commissions. Now they're making it on actual volume.
You know, these people who are so longing to bet on sport, the problem with using an app, of course, is that the device itself is addictive.
Yeah.
And so I could see people getting into trouble with that. But what if just in your own home, like, for example, here at my house, if I said, like, okay, I'm going to go feed the cats. Any wagers on which cat comes to the bowl first? Yeah. Is it going to be ShamWow or Severus? ShamWow or Severus? You know, young couples that are not able to work right now because or go into work because they have small children at home. Mm-hmm. Why not bet? You know, is the kid going to eat his vegetables or not?
Well, listen,
there's a lot of ways.
Listen, I can't say about ShamWow or Nancy the cat or who's going to eat first. But to your point, I think a lot of people have turned to this trading on their phones as a form, A, of entertainment, and, you know, saying to themselves, listen, this might be a way that I can make extra money and pay the bills. And for a long time, they've only effectively since March, if you think about it, they've only seen the stock market go higher. So, you know, they get desensitized to the fact that stocks go down as well. And my real fear is there are risks associated with this that people just don't understand. And quite frankly, they don't want to know about, because when the market goes up every day, if you try to be the person that cautions, a lot of times people don't want to hear it. One thing I've learned is everybody tells you they want to hear the truth. The reality is people just want to hear what helps them get through the day and get to sleep at night. That's the truth.
Right.
Now, if I invest my $50, right, mm-hmm. and my plan is when I can make when I can make $75 off of my $50, I'm pulling it out.
Well, when you can make, so in other words, when you get to 125, or if that 50 turns into 75?
Say I get to 125.
Well, think about that. You've more than doubled your money. That's a home run, right? I mean, you would sign up for that today.
But my point, Guy, is if I'm doing this in part because I like to gamble and mm-hmm. it's stimulating and it's entertaining, right? So now I have my $125, you know, my original 50 and then the additional 75, and I take it out. Okay, well, that was good. I'm glad I earned that little bit of money, but now it's over.
Yeah.
So doesn't it, by its very nature, make people go back in over and over again?
100%.
And the odds are that it's not always going to work.
Well, I mean, yes, I think you make an excellent point. There's an addiction associated with this as well, and it's unfortunate, but it's true. I mean, it's true with anything. I mean, think about a gambling addiction, a drinking. It's all the same thing, and I think a lot of people fall under that category, unfortunately, especially now when we're deprived of so many things. So it's a really dangerous time in our history for a number of reasons, not least of which my concern is, you know, there are people that are looking at the stock market as sort of a giant casino, and we all know how that ends. I mean, that there's a reason why, unless it's a Trump-owned casino, that they don't go bankrupt.
Guy, how do you do it? Are you playing Robin Hood on your phone? Or do you invest in a mutual? Like, how do you largely play the market personally?
You know, it's for me, it's just we have somebody that handles it for us, and I'm not trying to be glib here. So I'll still goof around from day to day, but for me, it's just sort of trying to stay in the market and pay attention. But you know, a lot of our money's in retirement accounts that are handled by somebody we've been with for many, many years. So I'm not of that, you know, addictive.
So your real money is in safe places.
Well,
relatively.
As safe as anything. You know,
yeah.
That's the other interesting thing. You know, everybody, there's this notion that somehow there's safety in stocks. Yes, there's a somewhat of a truth to that. But again, we've seen how fast stocks can go down as well. And again, if you were paying attention in late February, early March, you saw firsthand how bad things can get and how fast it can happen. And it's scary.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Guy Adami. We've learned a lot about how the stock market works. And now we're going to take the information you just gave us and run it through the old Pouncetonator. Paula?
Hey, Ben, great job. If I can get a little background music, I'll tell you what I learned. Excellent. Guy was the perfect instructor for my novice class in the stock market. He was most adamant that if you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail, which I'm going to memorize because if I ever join a dating site, I'll need a good description of my life for my profile page. What is the stock market? Well, the short answer is that the stock market is gambling that can be done during the day with no shame. It is not a measure of how people who have lost their jobs, homes, health care, and or never had a shot at those things to begin with are doing. Guy suggests that one invest in what you know, which is why I pulled all of my money out of Butterfinger several months ago, and I won't go anywhere near publicly traded eyebrow threading companies. The NASDAQ is a place where stocks are traded that you cannot get to in a cab from certain parts of New York City.
All right, he is the director of advisor advocacy.
Easy
He's
for
the
you
director
say,
of advisor
I mean,
advocacy.
Just forget it. Just say it's Guy Adami. It's been fun. By the way, I've enjoyed
it's
this.
It's been
Hopefully
really fun.
You guys had a good time. I had a ball.
Oh, we've had a great time.
This has been a blast, man.
Guy, if you ever want me to go on your show and give some stock tips, I'm in.
Listen, you have Bonnie's your person. You'll hear from my person soon, Paula.
All right. That sounds
okay.
good, man.
Definitely.
Thank you
Guy,
so much.
Guy, we're so happy to have you here, man.
Thanks, Phelps. Great. Thanks, Paula. Thanks, Bonnie. I had a lot of fun.
All right, thanks.
All right, take
Bye.
Care, guy. Thank you.
Coming up, verbal charades. I'm not sure what that is. That's coming up right after this.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of mega. A comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Holly and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the
be-
okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best
wow.
I ever had.
Hello, it is I, French President Trump, here to tell you that I have a mini podcast, the weekly French Trump press conference. I take questions from the press and then I storm out when they call me on a lie. I say, shut up, you enemy of the people. I get to lie if I want to, don't I, Bill Barr? Bill Barr says I get to. My podcast drops every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. East Coast time. But it is a podcast. It will wait for you wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun fact, about 3% of Antarctic ice is made of penguin urine, and 94% of that ice is found just outside of penguin bars. And we're back. Paula.
Hey, Adam, I have a great idea. Let's
yes?
play verbal charades.
So you want to play charades by describing to me what you're doing.
By describing to you what I'm doing physically.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So I'm holding my hand in a circle in front of my eye, and I'm using my other hand.
It's a movie. It's a movie.
Yes, it's a movie. Good. I'm holding up my thumb and a finger.
It's two words. It's a two-word
That's
movie.
That's right. Okay.
Two-word movie title.
Right.
The Sting. Poseidon Adventure. No, that'd be The Poseidon Adventure. Star Wars. It's Star Wars.
All right. My eyes are kind of unfocused, and I'm walking around my room bumping into things.
Blind Harry. Dirty and, Harry.
And you.
And I'm... let's see. I'm...
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
I'm... my palms are parallel.
Parallel palms. Oh, Charlie Chaplin. You're Charlie Chaplin.
No, no. I'm not Charlie.
You're the penguin. You're the penguin. You're Burgess Meredith in Batman.
No, my palms are... You know, Bonnie and Tony, feel free to jump in here because Adam is really not cracking this code.
So you're all wandering around with your palms down.
No, my palms are parallel facing vertically. And...
You're a Neanderthal.
No, what
you're Frankenstein.
Neanderthal has
you're
parallel
Frankenstein.
Vertically? It's a movie.
It's a
Clan of the that, Cave Bear.
It's that great Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy movie, You're a Neanderthal. That Tony, you have that to look forward to.
Hi, okay. I'm Land Romo, okay. Production Director at Starburns Audio. Due to time constraints, we will rejoin this podcast 20 minutes later.
Paula, come on, keep going. There's two words.
All right,
which word are you doing? Are you doing word one or word two?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm holding up one finger. Sorry.
First word is Frankenstein.
Okay, no. So my palms are extended, but they're parallel. Okay? And my eyes are unfocused, and I'm moving my palms around parallel, equidistant from my body.
It's like you're miming a pole. A pole
put
dancer.
Your,
pole
it dancer. Wasn't Frankenstein?
No, it's not Frankenstein. Put your... It's a two-word... It's a two-word title.
Oh.
Shaft. Okay, it's Shaft.
So
hi,
put,
I'm Land Romo, production director at Starburns Audio. Parallel. Due to time constraints, we're going to skip ahead again. I wish I was kidding.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say yes. All right, so I'm waving my finger in a circle in your face.
So you're sleepwalking, you're sleeping, you're in a trance, you're transient,
okay, and now
you're
I'm
asleep.
I'm tripping over things. I'm
Helen Keller. No, what was it called? Am I warm?
No.
Oh.
Hi. I'm Land Romo, production director at Starburns Audio. Due to the unusually lengthy nature of this audio charade segment, we will rejoin the program 15 minutes later.
Paula, maybe you should try something else.
It's okay. All right. Okay. You're right. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Here's one. So I'm my eye. All right. Listen, this is important. Okay. So my eyes are almost closed and I hold my hand up to my face and I tip it back and I go with my lips.
Go what with your lips?
I go with my lips.
You kiss.
No, I'm not kissing.
You pucker.
No,
sleep
I hold.
Sleep pucker.
And no, I curl my fingers. I curl my fingers into sort of a fist. My eyes are kind of closed. They're not entirely closed, but my eyes are sagging. And
you're tired.
Yes. But I tip my head back, and I go, well,
Sleepy Hollow!
No, not Sleepy Hollow. No.
I'm Land Romo, production director at Starburns Audio.
Okay, so okay.
Because
tipping,
it so clearly isn't Sleepy Hollow, we will return another 20 minutes into this verbal charade segment of the program.
Now I take my other hand, my left hand, and I'm making the letter C in front of myself, but facing down, and I'm pointing inside the letter C. I'm pointing down into the, my hand, my right hand
drinking
is pointing
hole.
Down.
Cup! It's a cup!
So, Yes. But I'm pointing into it.
Drinking
empty.
Water. Drinking wine.
My hand. I'm making a circle. With my
Phil,
in front of Tony.
Full. It's a full cup. It's an empty cup. It's a full cup.
Drinking.
I'm making
with my finger.
My eyes are kind of saggy a little bit.
Drinking problem. You have a drinking problem.
Not anymore. No. So when okay. No, but thank you for bringing it up. No, when I...
I'm Land Romo, program director of Starburns Audio. God, I need a drink. We'll return to verbal charades 10 minutes further in.
I tip my head back, right? And then my eyes kind of spring open a little bit.
Drinking awake.
Yes, now I'm pointing with my right hand into my the C circle with my left hand, of my left hand.
Drinking glass, drinking buddy, dead drunk.
Drinking goblet.
Class, something class. No. Class?
Oh my gosh. This couldn't be any clearer.
Is okay. drunk the first word?
No. No, I'm pointing into the C of my hand. But as I
liquid.
Tip my head back.
Liquid.
Yes, yes, yeah, yes, yes.
Liquid sky.
No, I'm making the circle gesture in front of Tony's face.
Liquid face.
My eyes pop open a little bit as I tip my head back.
Coffee.
I'm making this circle.
Coffee.
Yes!
It's coffee.
Coffee.
Yes.
Coffee.
Coffee. It is something about coffee. I'm Land Romo, production director at Starburns Audio. We'll rejoin our verbal charades players another 30 minutes in.
I'm pointing up.
Jolt!
My dogs are barking outside because they know the answer.
It's Coca-Cola. It's caffeine.
I'm making the circle gesture.
Okay. It's caffeine. It's tea. It's hot right. cocoa.
Is there a reason you weren't on password?
you're brewing, you're mixing, you're making, you're stirring.
Maybe try the second word.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm going to want to punch her when she says what it is.
Oh, my God. Me too. Go ahead, Paula. What's the second word? Second word.
Oh,
move
shit.
On to the second word.
I just realized I don't have a way of doing this second word.
Why did you pick this? Wait, I want to take a break from yours, okay? I'm holding my fist in front of my face and making a round motion next to it.
You are?
Yeah, to start off. I'm giving you one now. Here you go.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, so you're holding your fist. So, all right. So you're making a movie?
Yes.
Okay.
How many words? I point at you, and then I hold up one finger.
Oh, it's one word.
Yes, and now I'm making punching motions. I'm punching the air.
Rocky.
That's right. Now, Paula, continue yours.
Wow. I think you may have... you may have chosen an easier one to do. You know, now that I think about it, this is a really poor choice.
Howard's End.
Yeah,
no, it's not coffee.
I'm Land Romo, and I'm available to any other podcast network.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm going to do another one. I'll tell you that one later.
Wait. No. All right, tell us
what, say what
okay.
it is.
I'm holding my hand in a C in front of my eye, and I'm making a circle motion with my other hand.
It's a movie.
Yes, I'm pointing to Adam.
Okay.
All right, okay, I'm holding up three fingers and a thumb.
Four words.
Yes.
It's the sound of music.
Yes!
Oh, my God. Okay, now you have to say what the other one was.
Oh,
so
my
we can
God.
Punch you.
What was the first one, Paula?
Okay, you're going to think I'm really stupid when I say this.
Okay.
Okay, because now that I think of it, I thought I could get you to the first word, but clearly
right,
I couldn't.
And you couldn't.
And then
what
I realized
was...
I have no way. Okay, wait. Oh, yes, I do. All right. Okay, I'm pulling on my ear. I'm pulling on my earlobe.
Sounds
like Burnett.
Okay. Now I'm banging my two fingers on my forearm.
Two syllables.
Yes. And now I'm holding up two fingers in the air.
Second syllable.
Yes. And now I am holding my thumb over what would be my private parts. I'm extending my thumb over what would be my private parts.
Thummy. Do you want me? You want me to name private parts? There's only a few.
Well, you could, yeah.
Okay,
Virginia?
So
no
vag.
No, I'm extending my thumb.
I don't want to hear Adam say vag again. Stop it.
I much prefer to Virginia. Lordy. All right, wait. So,
well,
no,
you're choosing to do this to us.
I'm extending my thumb.
The size of your thumb.
I'm extending my thumb from what would be my private parts. I'm extending my thumb down.
It's a dick. It's a
yes.
dick.
I'm pointing to you, Adam. I'm pointing to you.
So it sounds like the second syllable sounds like dick?
No, it doesn't sound like. The second syllable.
It is dick. It's dick.
But it's not. It's.
Sick.
No, it's not. It's. Oh. I'm shaking my head.
Oh, so it's another word for dick.
No, I'm shaking my head again.
It's not another word for dick. You were sticking your thumb out of your private parts.
Right.
Prick.
No, it's not.
I'm lost.
Okay, all right, wait. Okay.
Oh, does it rhyme with sock?
No.
Okay.
God.
Okay, I'm pointing to Adam.
Man.
Yes, I'm nodding my head yes to Tony.
Okay, man. Oh, so it's a man's private part.
No.
No, man's the second syllable of the second word.
Yes. All right.
Man.
I'm banging my index finger on my...
First syllable.
Yes.
First syllable.
Man. Now I'm tugging on my ear.
Sounds like.
Sounds like.
Okay. All right. Now I'm putting my palms facing one another on top of each other horizontally. And I'm lifting my right palm off of my left palm and slapping it down again.
It's like a shark or a clam.
Smush.
I'm pointing it at him.
It's something with jaws. It's like biting.
I'm pointing it at him.
Clam?
Yes.
So it's clam man or something. It sounds like clam.
I'm pointing it at him. Yes.
Ham. Dam. Ma'am. Bam. Sam. Stam. Tam.
Sandman.
What is it, Tony?
Sandman.
No.
Oh.
Clam man. Lamb man. Dam man.
Sam.
Pam.
Sam.
Lamb. Dam. Bam.
Tony, I'm pointing at Tony.
The Black Klansman.
Yes.
Black Klansman? Are you fucking kidding me?
The Black Klansman?
I chose a very sophisticated movie to do verbal charades with, I realize now. This was really...
There are some problems here, Paula. Number one... Clan doesn't rhyme with clam.
But I got Tony to it.
Like, you take your coffee black?
Yes.
All right. Well, that was really fun. That was
fun. You know what?
No, it was fun.
Tony got it.
I had a great time.
Yeah, you know what? You couldn't have gotten it if I didn't communicate it. I mean, you had nothing but what I said to go on.
Oh, my God.
No, but Paula, what was the perpendicular hand thing? Throw your head back. What was that?
Those were two different things. So the perpendicular hands were me feeling on a wall. And if I could have gotten you that far, then I would have indicated that I was trying to find a light switch because
it was dark.
Right.
And dark equals black. Boy, you never would have got us
dark
there that way.
Dark would have been black?
Yeah.
Well, it would have had to been eventually. You know, you have to go... You take one word and move to the next and move to the next. You know,
well, okay.
Okay.
Verbal. Let me just say, I think you've created a fantastic game and played it very poorly.
You know, verbal charades, Adam, is not for everyone. You have to meet certain criteria in order to be invited to play verbal charades. Tony, by the way, is invited. You and Bonnie will have to just watch.
All right. Here's the thing, Paula. This is an ironic moment to bring it up, but you recently premiered a new game show, didn't you?
I did. And
why don't you tell us about that? Because it sounds fantastic.
Well, you know, I have quite a knack for these game shows. I am the Mark Goodson, Bill Todman of podcasting and game shows. This game show, it's called Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone, and I'll be Paula Poundstone. It's an over-the-counter game show to help with the symptoms of depression caused by the disaster factory that is the year 2020. Each week, two contestants earn points for what they know about each other. I'll be your lovely host. We tape via Zoom from my living room, so it also answers the nation's cry to fill the void left by lifestyles of the rich and famous. You can find Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone, on YouTube and on our social networks like Facebook, which is good, because Vlad might want to know what we're up to.
All right. Well, that's a great promo, Paula, and I'm looking forward to seeing that the next installment of that game show on your YouTube channel.
Yeah. You know what? We've been developing it all summer, and it has been fun. I don't know that it'll be as successful as Verbal Charades, but
What could be?
Yeah. I live in hope.
Yeah, and I just want to remind everybody out there that my new venture, the Starburn Sunday Sports Simulcast, is rolling at full speed. And here's how it works, everybody. You watch Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, but you turn the sound down and listen to me and famous comedian Jeff Cesario calling the game in simulcast. It's really fun, and we've got some great special guests every week. Just a week or so ago, we had Alonzo Bowden, and we also had Peter Sagal sat in with us, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, for a couple of innings. That's every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Turn on your TV while navigating your phone or computer to the Starburns audio channel on YouTube.
That sounds great.
It's really fun. It's fun. It's a way to call the baseball game. You get to watch the baseball game and hear very funny people talking about it as it's happening.
Take me out to the comedians. Take me out. Can't go out. Stay inside right with the comedians. Oh, you know what, Adam? I forgot to say one more thing. I'm tugging on my ear right now. No, I forgot to say.
Don't you dare.
I feel like this is like the Plug-a-Rama show, but I want people to know that they can go to cameo.com/PaulaP33, and I will deliver a video message to whoever you want. I'll tell your mom that you love her, or I'll tell Mike Pompeo that picking up his laundry isn't part of your job description. That's cameo.com/PaulaP33. That is all. Those are the only, despite all the things that I'm doing in my life and at PaulaPoundstone.com, I'm not saying one more word about them. Hey, we want to hear from all of you out there. If you have a great idea for a theme song and you have the essence of our show, then you know what? You can submit one. We play the really great ones on the air.
Yeah.
You can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're all over the place. We're probably going to be on the game show channel. And check out our Facebook page at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
That's our show, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Guy Adami, and special thanks to our house band returning champion, Ben Castle. You can reach him at Ben Castle on Twitter and Instagram. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by Land Romo. And a big special shout out to our late intern, Doug. Doug, we miss you more and more every day, and we promise we will bring whoever's responsible to justice. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me? Ben Castle, thank you so much. Sounds terrific. And also, you know, Doug would have gotten BlacKkKlansman with the minute I did the parallel palms.
I can't even picture the parallel palms.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a disability.
You were trying to indicate a wall by bringing your palms down near each other.
They didn't have to be near each other. They just had to be parallel. Because
You were disoriented, feeling for a wall in the dark.
Yes. That's exactly
right. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, yeah. Paula.
It was a... I don't know. And when I chose the film, I thought, oh yeah, this will be easy. But you got Sound of Music without me even saying anything other than it was.
I think of that as the movie you're going to mention next at all times.
It's true. There's so many ways that Sound of Music comes up in a person's life.
It doesn't mind.
Yeah, yeah. Like when the Baroness sends you off to boarding school.
No, like when I hang out with you.
Oh, that.
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.